Welcome to Virginia Outdoor Adventures Podcast. We bring outdoor adventure stories and recommendations from athletes, conservationists, authors, park guides, community leaders, and local business owners from across the Commonwealth. I'm your host, Jessica Bowser. Today's guest, Kyle Hitzelberg, believes his love of sports and the outdoors should be an experience accessible to everyone. Kyle works with athletes with physical disabilities and visual impairments from all over Virginia to provide adaptations for kayaking, rock climbing, cycling, rowing, whitewater rafting, mountain biking, and other outdoor sports. Through an organization called Sportable, Kyle is building community, transforming lives, and ensuring everyone has an opportunity to adventure in the outdoors. Let's go. Kyle, welcome to Virginia Outdoor Adventures.
Thanks for having me, Jessica.
What do you love about Virginia's outdoors?
I absolutely love that Virginia has the most diverse terrain that you can get involved in. At one moment, you can be on the beach. The next moment, you could be driving across Virginia through the plateaus and into the mountains. It's just amazing.
How did your interest in the outdoors lead you to work for Sportable?
So I love personally getting outside and recreating in my own life. And when I was looking through like in how to become a better rec therapist and provide those opportunities for individuals that have disabilities, one of the organizations I came across was Sportable. And for those of you that don't know what Sportable is, it's a Paralympic sports club that is in Central Virginia, Richmond to be exact, that offers 13 sports to individuals that have physical disabilities or visual impairments. So, my love of sports and my love of being outside brought me to this organization that provides those opportunities to our athletes.
That's fantastic. So what types of sports are we talking about here? Are we talking about like kayaking or cycling or what all do you do?
So our outdoor programming consists of cycling, kayaking, rock climbing. We also do some rowing out on the James. We do some specific one-offs where we will take our athletes and work with a community partner to offer rafting, sometimes whitewater kayaking. So yeah, we do offer a lot of outdoor programming throughout the year. So we offer most of those outdoor programs throughout the months of March to September. And in that, we probably offer no less than like 6 to 8 week programs for like a 2-session period. So it can be pretty intensive. Each of those programs I mentioned, like our kayaking or our cycling, there's normally more than one category that falls under that program. So like when I say that, I mean, like with cycling, we have like an adult rec program. So anyone that wants to recreate with cycling outside, we also have a competitive team that meets for cycling and they practice at a different location. We also have two other cycling programs, one specific for our youth athletes and one specific to a partnership that we have with a really cool organization named Reach Cycle, who they offer Amtrak cycles for individuals that are unable to maybe use like a typical hand cycle or recumbent or are working their way through therapeutic cycling at physical therapy. And it's a really good transition for them to do it in their community. So like I said, we have a lot of programs and in each program, it just kind of branches out.
Why don't we dive into some of the details about the actual adaptations that you make? Like I'm trying to envision what an adaptation for rock climbing would look like. Can you sort of describe, maybe give some examples of some of the sports and what the adaptations are like?
Totally. So with rock climbing, there's a lot of adaptations that can be put into place. One of the things I want to highlight with that particular sport is that's really cool is that most of our athletes don't really use an adaptation. They use the harness that anyone else would be using, and they're climbing to their ability level each practice. So it's kind of unique in that sense that the community itself is built around being that inclusive. But we do have things that are called like, it's an arc harness. So it kind of looks like a, almost like a swing system that the athlete would use a pull-up bar with. And the pull-up bar allows them to control their ascent going during their practice, while they're not using the typical like hand placements that your other athletes are going to use, they're able to still get that sense of climbing and climbing to the specific height of that wall. And that's one of the sports that we have that we do a lot of not specific adaptations like you would see in like our cycling program, but it has a few that we offer.
are your athletes using wheelchairs while they're climbing, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we'll have athletes that have a spinal cord injury or some other injury that, you know, has them using their day chairs to come to practice. And quite often they'll harness up and, you know, your typical harness, and they are able to put some like padding, be it like knee pads or something like that, so they don't scrape the wall, or if they do, that they're not damaging or having any abrasions to their skin. And they'll use their upper body to climb like any able-bodied athlete. In that sense, we have a one athlete in particular that he is double above the knee amputee, and he's a monster rock climber. Like, he can scale one of the walls like it's nothing. And when you see him do it, it's, again, it's like one of those interesting things where, like, he doesn't really need any adaptation to come to that sport. We just provide the opportunity for him to have a time slot where he can show up and feel like he's supported and do the sport he wants to do.
Amazing. And then what about cycling? You mentioned that was a little bit different.
Yeah. So cycling's pretty crazy in how much you can get involved with adaptations to make it possible for our athletes to get out there and do the sport they love. So kind of, as you mentioned, if we have an individual that comes when they're using a day chair or using a wheelchair, you know, we might have them set up on quite a few different hand cycles just to try out what's going to work. So it goes from like what we would consider more of a novice level hand cycle. So a little bit bigger, bulkier, doesn't go quite as fast, isn't as aerodynamic, to something that's like a brand name, like is like a Force G, where it's a little bit sportier, it's a little bit lighter, it's closer to the ground, so it's more aerodynamic. With each of those cycles, you have so many different things that you can alter to improve that person's experience. If someone comes to the program, and let's say that they're quadriplegic, so they don't have a lot of hand function, there's a different set of handles that you can use that are quad specific. So basically it would allow that person to use what's called active hands. So that's another thing that they're going to, a piece of equipment that they're going to have ready for themselves. We have a couple of sock ones. They're not super great. And basically it's like a mitt. So it helps them to strap their hand to whatever the object is. So we would take that, we would place that individuals into the quad grip, which is going to have two bars that's right. One's right above their wrist and one's right below their wrist. And that's going to help to stabilize their arm. And then the middle bar where their hand's going to grab on, we would use those active hands to strap them to that bar. So they can just focus on doing the pushing and the pulling of the hand cycle and not have to worry about their hands flying out while they're in, you know, a kind of like mid transition through the hand cycle rotation. And that's just one small thing to do to make them more comfortable and confident in their cycle. There's a lot of other strapping that we do for like someone's legs to make sure they don't get abrasions from the chain or the wheel itself, because a lot of these are built without any kind of like leg guards or anything like that. And then same thing with like seat belts and other locking mechanisms to help support the person's trunk while they're actually, you know, cycling. For us, like a lot of our athletes aren't going to have the same trunk function as an able-bodied athlete. So they're not going to be able to keep themselves as upright in the cycle. So we're trying to do our best to modify that position, modify the angle of the back to really support them and make it so that like their experience is top notch.
Where does this equipment come from? Do you purchase the equipment and then make the adjustments yourself, or do they have to be special ordered?
So it's very dependent on the sport and what the equipment needs are. Our equipment, a lot of it is grant funded. So we will typically identify needs in a program. We will attempt to get a grant to help fund or support that program. And then we'll use those grant funds to purchase whatever it is. So one really good instance I can give you right offhand is cycling is a huge sport for us. And we've noticed that there's, of course, a huge like emergence of using e-bikes, and how great that is to be able to provide someone an opportunity where, you know, let's say they're someone that has a spinal cord injury or has MS and they get fatigued, but they want to be able to go ride with their friends on the Capitol Trail for the, you know, 50, 100 plus miles. Something like an e-bike would like improve their ability to do that and actually be more inclusive than, you know, if they're on their hand cycle and they're only able to do 7 miles and their friends are like, oh, okay, well, we'll see you, you know, once we're back from our 43 or whatnot. You know, it's not quite a great feeling. So we identified that as like a way to provide opportunities for our athletes, and we applied for a grant, and luckily we've gotten it. We should have two of those actually probably by the end of this year, which is huge. Kind of like back to your question. Yeah, a lot of our stuff is grant funded. Some of it is very athletes like specific. So they need to get fitted for it. They'll go either like VCU has a creative lab that they can help them to make athlete specific equipment, or, you know, some sports will have a way to be fitted for that equipment. Kayaking is a pretty good example on, you know, some things need to be modified specifically for the person. So they might need to, you know, like the basic seating for one of our adaptive kayaks, it'll have like side guards to help with trunk control. That person might need to have their measurements done and whatnot to have it specifically built for them, because, you know, as you can imagine, not everyone's one size. So there's a lot of different avenues that we have to take when we're looking at an athlete and what's going to really improve their experience, and trying to get them, one, to identify what sport they really want to be in, and two, like, we really promote them apply for their own individual grants so they can get equipment that they can use when they're not at our programs. So there's that too.
Can you quickly just describe for the listeners what an e-bike is? Because I just recently learned myself what an e-bike is, and I'm sure somebody's listening to this and thinking, what is that?
Yeah, so an e-bike is just, it has electronic assist. So for someone, say that they start pedaling or, you know, hand cranking, and they're starting to fatigue, the e-assist will kick in and take over, so they'll continue their speed with having to use less power so that they're able to go, you know, X amount more miles.
They're really cool. I was just recently talking to someone who owns an outfitter down in Bristol, and he was telling me that his sales of e-bikes is just exploding. Everybody's really excited about them and he can't keep them stocked. He was telling me that if you see one on a trail, you might not even know that it's an e-bike because it looks like a regular bike, but it has a motor. It's very quiet, I think, right?
Yeah. So it is, it's definitely like pretty unique. I've seen a couple come out in some of the rides we've been in, and you don't really know it till you're right up on that person or they're right up on you and you're like, oh, that's why they're killing it. I'm sitting here getting really fatigued and they're like flying by me. Not to say it's really hard for them to do it against me, but it's super cool. We're really excited. We have one coming that specifically for those that are quadriplegic. So the way it's going to work is that they're able to actually change gears and whatnot using their wrist. And it's super cool to have that ability and be able to take it to our athletes that, you know, they get out there and they kill it on their own. But to be like, hey, you know, we were talking about doing the century next year at the Cap to Cap. Do you want to do it? Here, you can use this bike. And that's huge.
Amazing. Yeah, that is huge. It would be huge for me to have that ability because a century for me is daunting just to think about. So for somebody else to be able to do it, it's like pretty cool. So you've explained some of the adaptations for kayaking, for cycling, for rock climbing. Were there any other sports that you wanted to mention?
Let me focus on two other ones that we offer. So I want to just real quickly talk about rowing, and anyone that's rowed before kind of gets that there's a seat that's movable. There's no back to that seat. You use a lot of leg strength to do the movement. So I just want to talk about that. We use in that program fixed seats. So we take out that moving seat component. We have a rail system that we put into the boat directly. And then we have a locking seat that is able to be adjusted for angle and comfort, cushions and whatnot. And then for a lot of our athletes, they can't use the foot straps or the foot pulling system that's already mounted in there. So we'll take it out completely and just allow them the space to use for, you know, just having their legs like sit free. Another really cool thing that we do that, you know, probably surprised a lot of people is we're able to get individuals with quadriplegia out on the water. What we do is there's a locking system that you can put into place on the oars. So it's double locked, so the oars can't slip out, if you're familiar with rowing at all. And then we'll use a blocking system to keep the oar from rotating. So they're able to actually just focus on their stroke mechanics instead of worrying about having to fight the oar just to be on the water. And it's really cool because we're able to do this in a double. We're able to do it in a, you know, a four-person boat. We're able to do it in a single. And the other one I find like super fascinating is archery. So there is a lot of different adaptations that we can use for that for individuals that just want to get into it. One is a mouth tab. So, you know, you or I might use our fingers to pull back the bowstring. Whereas what we can do for someone that maybe they don't have that kind of strength in their arms, or maybe their disability is as such that they just don't have the function for it or the dexterity, they're able to take, and it's pretty simple. You can take like a parachute cord and build a mouth tab so they're able to pull it using their teeth. Super interesting. And there's also this shoulder system that's it's like a mechanism that helps to pull it back for someone that's able to do so and doesn't have the use of one of their arms. And with it, that mechanism, they can use their chin. I believe they can use the side of their face to unlock the mechanism to shoot. It's so interesting because it gets so extensive once you really get into it, where, you know, for both cycling and archery, I've heard of adaptations with a puff and blow system. So if you're familiar with that or not, a puff and blow system, a lot of it has to do with you breathing into a tube and then getting responses based off how you did it. So like I've heard of a guy that I work with making that system work with how to change gears on a cycle. And I've seen it work with triggering systems for archery. So it's super, super cool. And it's almost like there's limitless ways to adapt something if someone wants to do that.
That's fabulous. So tell me a little bit more about your athletes. Are they participating just for the love of it, or are they actually competing as well?
So a little bit of column A and a smaller portion of column B. So we have a lot of recreational athletes. We serve, you know, up to 400 plus athletes a year. Be it in our programs or our competitions, but we have a lot of recreational athletes that simply come out to do a program to one, try it out, and two, like see, you know, that might be the program that they love and they're going to do continuously forever. And they're going to, you know, they're going to do it in their own personal lives outside of our programs. They're going to apply for equipment grants and they're just going to enjoy it for what it is. And then we have some athletes that are super, super competitive, like more competitive that I've ever been in my life. We have a couple of athletes that they have gone so far as to make it onto Team USA for the Paralympics. We've got a couple of athletes that go to each and every competition that we go to for whatever sport it is. So, you know, just a highlight for each sport, we do lead up to events and competitions. Events being like a family ride or something fun that's not really like looking to make a PR for anything. And then competitions where it's either like head to head with other organizations. So like our team sports, or it's trying to do personal best. It's trying to, you know, show that adaptive sports are just as competitive as able-bodied sports. And each one of those is super cool, super, I will say time consuming, and that the athletes expect a lot and try to get into a lot of different training programs that we can offer. But yeah. And if you want, I can talk a little bit more about the competitions for the sports that we do have.
Sure. But before we do, I just have this burning question. Have you personally worked with any of the athletes who have gone on to represent Team USA?
Yes-ish. So we have a Team USA hopeful right now who is in our cycling program, and he's in our road racing program. And he comes to our swim program when we're able to have it. And I actually met him at a track a couple of weeks back to do the virtual combine for triathletes. So he's trying to go in for the triathlon team. And,
wow.
You know, I don't know how accurate this is, but I'm going to say it, and I'm gonna live up to what I'm saying right here. I believe if, you know, current health pandemic wasn't going on, he would have made Team USA for Tokyo. He's that good.
Wow.
So yes, I've been able to work with him a little bit. I love trying to cycle near him. And I say near him because I've got a good 2 minutes of me full out sprinting where I'm able to keep up with like his jogging speed on a bike. And then he's gone. But he's a great guy. I love hanging out with him. And when I was at the track with him, just watching him run, I got there. And I was like, hey, man, you're not like expecting me to pace you, are you? Because I am not very fast. I mean, I can give you one solid mile that's under 7 minutes and that's it. And he was like, oh no, I don't need any of that. That's totally fine. Don't worry about it. I was like, oh, thank goodness. I'll time you all day, buddy. Right here for you.
Oh my gosh. That's so fun though, to get to work with an athlete of that caliber. I can only imagine. I mean, what's going through your mind? What are you feeling when you're working with an athlete like that?
Well, I will say it's slightly intimidating for sure. Cause you're competitive in nature as an athlete yourself. And then we start to think like, how much more competitive would you need to be Olympic level? I know, like there's just no way I could do it. I just don't have that kind of commitment. And then when you're working with an athlete that's doing that, you're thinking, well, hey, like I really don't want to like mess up their training. I really want to make sure like it's like firing on all cylinders. You're trying to figure out like, okay, well, they need this. Like, how am I going to do that? And like, let me find all these resources that are going to be better served than I could. Let me get them in touch with these really great coaches that have been doing this for years. You know, oh, they're looking for this modification for their equipment so they can have a quicker transition, or it's going to make them that much better, or it's going to fit them better. Okay, well, like, what can I do from my end and from a program management standpoint to make sure that they are getting all the support they need to really make it, you know? And when you get in the nitty gritty side of like adaptive sports, all this equipment is super expensive. Like all the adaptations you make is expensive. All the just baseline, you know, like hand cycles or wheelchairs or, you know, like kayaks and stuff, it's all so expensive. So it's a lot of pressure, not just on the athletes or myself, but like trying to figure out if they're going to do the cost endeavor to get this equipment, you know, we have to make sure that it's going to be the right thing. We have to make sure it fits them. We have to make sure that it's going to make their game that much better. So yeah, it's super nerve wracking, but on the flip side, it's fun. Like, you know, I'm sitting at the track watching this guy run 3,000 meters faster than I could probably bike it. I mean, like it's crazy, you know, it's so cool.
Yeah. Well, it sounds really inspirational. If everything goes according to plan, one day you're going to be watching him on TV at the Olympics. Like, how amazing is that?
Yeah, no, that'd be so fun to sit there and be like, yeah, I know that guy. Yeah. Yeah. I rode a bike near him one time.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but me as a former teacher, I'm imagining the whole scenario play out like that was one of my students. And I'm sure when that moment would come, like I would be bawling because I would be like so touched and just so excited and all of it, all the feels, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's definitely one of those instances where if one of the athletes that I got to work with made it to Team USA and was at the Paralympics, like, I feel like I'm gonna eat that cost. I'm gonna show up at that event. I'm gonna try to get tickets. Like I'd love to be able to be there and see them sell.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. So thank you for sharing that. That's gosh, that's so awesome. So when that does happen, you're gonna have to let me know because absolutely I'm gonna be tuned into that like I know him myself.
Oh, for sure. It'll be the first time you ever see me like post anything on social media. You'll be like, oh, well, there it
is. Kyle's feed is going to be filled.
That's right.
Okay. So you had started to mention some of the other competitions. So let's make sure that the other competitions get some recognition as well.
Yeah. So I just want to kind of go into a few of them because I think there's, you know, not a lot of people know about a lot of the parasport competitions that are offered around. So there's for cycling, there's a whole race series. It's through MABRA. That's MABRA. And Peter Swan, he's this really cool dude that lives out on the East Coast. He puts together all these race sections for each ride or time trial or crit that involves para athletes. So anyone that wants to sign up and stuff like that, they're able to go out and compete, and Peter does a really great job at making sure there's awards and whatnot. And athletes that want to participate can do it for free if they need to, or pay a very small fee. So that's a really cool thing that we do for our athletes is try to encourage them to go. With our new competitive team, they're going to have to go. That's kind of how all of our competitive teams work, is that once there's a competition and once we're a team, you're going to go. And those races are kind of throughout the summer and springtime. And then like for our team sports, they normally have a whole season where they're traveling all over the East Coast, if not over to the West Coast, to compete against other organizations. So like our wheelchair rugby team will compete. Our basketball team goes and competes. Our lacrosse team goes and competes. And then we have like our individualized athletes who we try to support in their competitions as well. So we have some tennis athletes that are doing really well in their specific divisions. So they'll go and compete on their own. And a lot of that's out of pocket expense, but here and there we can try to help out as best as possible to get them some coverage. The other thing that we do is like with rowing, when it's typically up and running, we go and we'll do a couple of regattas. And it's very similar to cycling in that there's, I think only, and I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right, there's only one fully adaptive regatta on the East Coast, and that's in Philly. And it's called the Bayada Regatta. So we'll go to that. But for any other competitions, it's normally with the able-bodied counterpart. So it's really cool that you get all these other rowers out there or cyclists cheering on our para athletes, and it's something that they're not really exposed to, but they get to see them compete too. So it's pretty cool.
Where are your athletes from? Are they primarily based in Richmond or do they come from other areas?
They travel quite far. We have a lot of athletes that are local, so they live either in Richmond or Chesterfield or Henrico. I want to say most of our athletes, they probably live in Chesterfield if I had to guess off the top of my head. If you live in Richmond, it's not super accessible. It's not the best place for our athletes to live. But then again, we have some athletes that they travel from Virginia Beach. They travel from Charlottesville. They travel down from the DC area. I don't know of any athletes that travel too far south. We have some athletes that come up from Petersburg for some of our sports. And it's really because there are other organizations that have adaptive sport opportunities in Virginia, but they don't have as many as we have, or they don't have as consistent offerings, or their offerings, they don't have the localities to work with, or the facility space that we can get. So I know like a couple of people that I've talked to about cycling specifically, they come to they like to come to our programs because we have access to the Capitol Trail, and you know their current locality doesn't have that kind of like space where you can cycle and be safe, or that it's, you know, pretty flat in comparison to trying to, you know, bike through the mountains in Stanton or something like that. So yeah, we have a lot of athletes from all over, and it's pretty cool. It's also a little, in, you know, my personal opinion, it's a little upsetting because you want these opportunities, you know, throughout Virginia, and you want them throughout not just Virginia, but the US, and there's just not that many.
So other than Sportable, are there some other organizations or partners that you have that are in different areas of the state that perhaps might be more convenient for some of your athletes?
So there are some, and, you know, I can mention a few. They just don't offer quite the same experiences, I guess, or the same sports, to be honest. So like Wintergreen Adaptive Sports, they're out there at Wintergreen, and they do a lot of adaptive skiing, and that I know they have some other sports that they offer, adaptive skiing being like their biggest one. And that's a really cool opportunity for any athlete that's never done it. Like it's really, from what I've heard, like a really unique experience that you're not going to easily have access to. And then there's other places like Get Set for All. They're out at Virginia Beach, and they do some really cool sports that we don't offer. So they do like sit volleyball, and I think they do bocce, and those are really cool opportunities that we don't have. And then, you know, we have our own community partners that they offer stuff in the area that we can't offer just because we don't have the capacity or the knowledge to do it. So, you know, I had mentioned earlier that we went on a rafting trip as one of our like kind of one-off experiences, of which we hope to be a little bit more active with. And that was with an organization called Beyond Boundaries. And they just have a lot more knowledge about that kind of sport to feel like they can properly support our athletes in doing it. Whereas like, you know, if you ask me like, hey, can you take someone rafting? I'm like, yeah, no way. Like, I don't know this or that about guiding a raft down the river. And then you know, there's just some other organizations that do some really cool stuff, like Team River Runner. I think they're based throughout the U.S., but I know they have a place in Fredericksburg, and they do a lot of veteran outreach for the sports that they offer, specifically kayaking. We partner with a couple of other veteran-specific organizations to do some programs, like, you know, the Hunter Holmes McGuire VA Hospital here in Richmond, the PVA Mid-Atlantic chapter, and we do some with the Wounded Warrior Project as well. And then the last thing I'll mention is a really cool organization that does an opportunity that I can't tell more people to go help with it. If you just want to volunteer, or if you know someone that would want to learn how to do it, to go do it. And that's Life Rolls On. And they do a surfing clinic almost every summer. This summer not included, but, you know, next summer, hopefully, where they teach and have surfing for individuals that have, I think, all types of disabilities. So there's a huge community around that that comes together at Virginia Beach, and volunteers, you know, you don't have to know how to surf, but you can help athletes get onto the surfing on the surfboard, or like how they transition out of the water. And then they have like coaches in the water. It's just a really huge, cool opportunity.
That's a lot of options around the state. I didn't even realize that any of those things existed. Like, I'm thinking about adaptive skiing and adaptive surfing. Like, who knew?
Right. Yeah. And you know, I say there's not a lot of opportunities. There's quite a few. I think there's not like the same kind of rec leagues that you or I could go do. And that's the frustrating part about it on the grand scheme. But, you know, there's a couple things I didn't even mention, where it's like, if you want to do like therapeutic horseback riding or competitive horseback riding, you can get into it in Virginia. So, like, you know, like, I used to ride horses as a kid. I never got to barrel racing level, but my sister did. And there's opportunities for athletes across Virginia that want to do that, where they can go to a specific horse farms that have the gear to do it and get out there and do it. So yeah, there's so many cool things to look into.
Very cool. So what do you enjoy most about working with the athletes?
What I enjoy most is what I also find to be the most frustrating, I think, is that I really enjoy the fact that the sports that I feel like are, and I think a lot of people feel this way, they're in the field, they're basic human right to have access to these rec opportunities in these sports. What I enjoy most is being able to provide what everyone should be able to have access to. And our athletes deserve that access, and being able to go to a cycling practice and meet with an athlete that has never cycled because they never had that opportunity is, you know, it's awesome. It's such a cool experience. And it's something I think, you know, the able-bodied community often takes for granted, that we have access to almost any recreational opportunity that we want to do. Whereas, you know, a lot of our athletes, our programs are that one opportunity to come out and do it. So I really enjoy that. And I just also add one more thing to this, is that I really enjoy getting to know and hang out with our athletes and trash talk and have a good time and just make it like what it is. It's a sport. You know, like my wheelchair rugby team, the Possums, I talk a lot of trash. I talk trash at practice. I text them about stuff and make fun of them. They make fun of me. Like, it's a little fun family. Like, you know, you just build these really cool relationships. And there's a couple athletes that sometimes I have to check myself and then tell volunteers or other coaches, I'm like, yeah, sorry. Like, that's just our relationship. You know, we don't mean any, it's a hate relationship. We don't really mean any of this. Like, outside of it, we're cool. Like, we're not being, you know, but it's just one of those things. Like, you make some really cool friends with your athletes. And as I said, like, it's all through doing something that we should all be able to do.
Right. And thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. I'm sure there are going to be people who are listening to this just because they're interested, but then there are also going to be people who are listening and thinking that they know somebody who could perhaps benefit from this.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope, you know, like, someone that's listening and it's like, oh man, like, I love mountain biking. I didn't know, you know, my friend that, let's say they have cerebral palsy, could get into mountain biking, but, you know, can they? The answer is yeah, they sure can. And it's just one of those things that just being aware of it for sure. And then finding the resources on how you'd be able to do it.
So if someone is interested in learning more about participating, where can they find that information?
They can find it either on our website, which is Sportable, and that's Sportable.org. They can contact me directly, which is just my first name, Kyle, which is Kyle, at Sportable, which I just spelled, .org. They can call our office, which I should know our office number, but I don't. But it is on our website. Or they can contact one of the other program managers. Anyone in our office is going to be super knowledgeable on like how to get you involved with us or with an organization that's closer to you if there's something else you want to do. So if you, you know, live out in Southwest Virginia and you want to know about how to get into skiing or something like that, we can put you in touch with somebody that does it closer to you than we are.
I think we should also mention if there is a cost associated with this and what it might take financially for someone to be able to participate.
Yes. So we do have two memberships. One is a $15 a month membership, and that allows you to participate in three sports of your choosing throughout the year. And then we have, I think it's called like an elite membership, and it's like $20 a month. I say like, it is $20 a month. And you can participate in any sport you want to participate in for the whole year. So like any of our sports, all 13, 5, 6, whatever number. And that includes like any of like the very unique experiences that we might do, like a rafting or something like that. And yeah. And if you can't afford it, we have scholarship opportunities. So similar to like how you would go to a YMCA or whatnot, we have the opportunity to kind of review your ability to pay or not. And then we will, you know, typically we don't turn anyone away. If you couldn't pay or you're not able to afford the $15 a month or the 20, we're not going to, we're going to make sure that you come out and have that program experience regardless. But yeah, we have a scholarship opportunity. We have a lot of athletes that take advantage of it because they need to. And it's no, like, you know, there's no negative thing about you doing it for sure. And one thing that I like to add is that if there's any program or practice or something where an athlete is really interested and just doesn't want to make the jump just yet to joining our organization, all the program staff are very cool with being like, well, just come to the practice. Like, you don't have to sign up for anything. I just want you to come. If you want to just, you know, if you just want to spectate, that's cool. If you want to get like involved at all, if you want to, you know, to be out there kayaking or cycling or whatever, then we'll bring something for you. You know, you just let us know what your level of comfort is. So yeah, that's always a definite choice for someone if they're still unsure.
So it sounds like you all do a great job of making sure there are no barriers in preventing someone from participating.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I think it's pretty renowned in our office that this is definitely something that everyone should have access to regardless. You know, of us being it's recreational, like everyone should be able to do it.
Great. And I'll be sure that all of the links that you just mentioned to the website and to your email address and maybe even the phone number, if you remember it and send it to me, I'll put those in the show notes so that if anybody wants direct access to them, they can find those links pretty easily in the show notes.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. I'll definitely send you the number.
I have a couple of questions to close this out. These are questions that I ask all my guests. So the first one is, what is one piece of gear you can't live without?
That has to be my helmet. So I wear a helmet regardless of where I'm at when I cycle. And, you know, it's huge for me. Like I've constantly told like people that are at our programs, you have to wear a helmet. I live by that. Yeah, like I had my niece come and stay with me for a little while, and like she wanted to ride bikes. And I was like, well, where's your helmet? She's like, well, I don't have one. Hold up, hold your horses. We're going to get you one. So that's it.
Now, that is a really important piece of gear to have, because I frequently see people riding who don't have helmets on. And I know a couple of people who were just out on a Sunday afternoon joyride and fell and hit their head. And it's really serious when that happens.
Oh, for sure. And I've met multiple people that have been hit by cars and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, it's just one easy piece of equipment to have on.
Right. Okay. And then the next question is, what is your next big Virginia outdoor adventure?
So I have a huge outdoor adventure. I think my wife and I recently purchased a small property down near Lake Gaston. So we are going to spend a lot of time exploring that area, getting familiar with the Roanoke River in the south of Virginia, all the little, the big wildlife management areas that are down there. So my hope is, you know, within the next 2 months, I've completed most of the housework.
That is a really big adventure. Where is Lake Gaston? Tell us, because I'm not so sure that I know.
Yeah, so it spans a pretty decent section of Southern Virginia and into North Carolina. The location about where we're going to be is in Bracey, Virginia, which, you know, I won't lie to you, I didn't know where that was, but it's right off 85. And there's a lot of state parks along the route, so it's pretty cool. You know, I think I mentioned to you prior to us getting on the recording, like I had like flown through a couple of those like Okinichi, but I've never really gotten to spend time there. So I'm really excited to kind of, you know, actually enjoy the parks.
I think that's going to be great. Okinichi is sort of the premier destination for kayaking and boating and other water sports down in that part of Virginia.
Yeah, I'm all about that. I've been, that's another thing I've been trying to convince my wife to do, is let me buy a kayak.
You absolutely should. And you need to listen to my previous episode with Donna Shaughnessy, who does overnight kayaking trips. It's unbelievable the kind of stuff that she does. And she's totally got me interested. Like, I bought an inflatable kayak, but now I have to figure out how I'm going to plan for overnight trips with that, because that sounds pretty badass to me.
Yeah, I'm going to have to hook up with Donna and try to do one of these trips.
Right. Oh, and then also down there, you've got Stanton River State Park, which is also, it's like the two bodies of water are kind of connected. It's, I think it's called Kerr Reservoir. And then that connects to the lake that you just bought your property on. But Stanton River also has boat launches, and there are cabins, which, by the way, are recently renovated and are really beautiful. They're original cabins that were built by the Civilian Conservation Corps in the 1930s, but they are right on the water. So especially cabin number one, which is sort of like right at the tip of the peninsula and sort of juts out into the water. So in the winter, when there's no leaves on the trees, you can like see water all around you. It's really cool.
That sounds awesome. I'm gonna have to hit up some of the people I know that work for state parks to give me an in on cabin one.
Yeah, there you go. So, well, have a wonderful time doing that. I mean, I imagine that's going to take up a lot of your time if you're going to be working on the house.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it'll take up a little bit, but luckily it's going to be kind of cold. So, my outdoor stuff will probably be a little bit limited, but, no, it should be good. I'll do it quickly. A quick renovation.
Yeah, hurry up and get it done so you can get outside.
Exactly.
All right. Adventure on, Kyle. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us. Rate, review, and share with a friend. Follow us on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you may listen to podcasts. Virginia Outdoor Adventures is hosted by me, Jessica Bowser. Cover art illustrated by Olivia Smith. Editing by Alexander Valencia. Executive production by Steph Garrett. We love to hear from our listeners. Contact us on our website, virginiaoutdooradventures.com. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, adventure on.